This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
There are continued huge debates over even the most basic labeling and transparency of what's in our food.
It's that time of year again, the season of giving, or at least the season of buying. When you're perusing the shelves, be they virtual or actual, what matters to you? Beyond price, quality, and value, what about knowing how the company that made this product treats its workers? The extent to which production depletes natural resources, and what impact this product has on the environment? Many of us care about these things in the abstract, but it would be awfully arduous to research all of that while we're out there trying to get our shopping done. If only there were an app. But there is. Our guest today on Sea Change Radio is Dara O'Rourke, UC Berkeley professor and co-creator of Good Guide, a website and smartphone app that consumers can use to make informed decisions on what they're buying. Just scan the barcode and get a product score on topics ranging from social justice to greenhouse gas emissions. We talk about what has to happen next to boost consumer awareness, like increasing transparency on the use of nanoparticles, fragrances, and genetically modified organisms, and how tricky it is to calculate a comprehensive product score for social responsibility. Welcome back to Sea Change Radio, Dara O'Rourke. He is the co-founder of Good Guide, and he's also an associate professor in environmental sciences at UC Berkeley. Dara, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much.
We spoke to you a few years ago where you gave our listeners an overview of the products you review and what Good Guide is all about. If you can just refresh our memories exactly what the mission of Good Guide is.
Absolutely. So we set out to empower consumers with much better information than they've ever had before about the environmental, the social, and the health impacts of products and companies. So we have a team of scientists and then engineers, software engineers, that have built a website, goodguide.com, and an iPhone app, an Android app, and now a set of tools to share this information across the web that rates basically any mainstream product that you would find in a store in the US. We've rated about 250,000 products in a dozen product categories: personal care, household chemicals, food, paper products, lighting products, toys, some electronics. And our mission is really to help consumers make better purchase decisions, decisions that reflect their values, that help them find safe, healthy, sustainable products, but ultimately products that match their concerns and their values. And there are lots of services on the web that'll tell you the best product that's been tested or 100 people have tried it out. But what our team is trying to do is kind of the hard research of going behind the product, behind the label, behind what they say, down the supply chain to evaluate all the ingredients within the product and potential human health or environmental impacts of those ingredients. Lots and lots of awareness since we last spoke about chemicals within personal care or cosmetics or household cleaning products that more and more consumers are concerned about the potential human health impacts of those, the health impacts, the environmental impacts. More and more awareness of labor rights issues down supply chains, whether it's Apple's iPhone factories or Nike, or even in food product categories, looking at treatment of workers, treatment of animals, and I think a lot of increasing awareness of climate change over the last few years. So we see more and more consumers want to know not only is the product high quality and does it work and is it from a brand I trust, but also they want to know about will it have a potential negative impact on my health or my family's health, will it have a negative impact on the environment? And we're really seeing increasing growth of awareness, not only among consumers, but among some of the largest retailers in the U.S. around these issues.
And last time we focused a lot on shampoos and toothpaste. Maybe you can highlight some of the newer categories that consumers would find if they went to goodguy.com.
Sure. So we basically have tried to cover a mainstream store. So what you would find if you went to a Target or a Safeway or a CVS, and try to cover the main aisles of that store that a consumer might have concerns about. So food is a big category for us. We rate food for its nutritional value, as well, again, as potential concerns around specific ingredients, artificial colors, artificial flavors, sweeteners, that increasing numbers of consumers are concerned about. And so food, huge category for us. Pet food, also a very large category. More and more consumers, unfortunately, out of a number of scandals over the last few years of melamine showing up in pet food, contaminants showing up in pet food, killing pets across the U.S., that people shopping for pet food want to know what's in that, where was it made, is it safe and healthy for my pet? Apparel is a category that we're doing a lot of work on right now, basically implementing a sustainability screen of the apparel that you might buy. And again, the top issue for most consumers on apparel is how does it look and how does it make me feel? And we know that's what you first want, is you want to find apparel that looks good and makes you feel good and is at an affordable price. But again, more and more consumers are starting to think, okay, well, but how was the apparel made? What were the labor conditions under which it was made? With the tragedy in Bangladesh last year, what are the risks to workers in the supply chain for this? How is the company that I'm supporting doing on labor rights issues, safety issues, treatment of women and their supply chain issues? And even in apparel, we're seeing more and more of our clothing has complex chemicals on the clothing for stain resistance, for wrinkle resistance, for giving the clothing different attributes, in jeans even, all sorts of things that you may recall from 20 years ago when you bought acid wash jeans. Well, we've gone way beyond acid washes to enzyme washes and laser etchings and all sorts of new technologies to make your clothing look distressed or worn in or whatever. So across these categories, really, we're seeing more concerns among mainstream consumers for thinking about attributes that go beyond just price and quality. And so what Good Guide is trying to do is to deliver that additional information so people can find great products at great prices, but that also have been evaluated for their environmental, their social, their labor, their health impacts.
And do you take into account the quality of products in terms of if you're doing an apparel product? Do you say, well, this has amazingly good social justice and sustainability ratings, but it looks like crap? do you not take into account the traditional consumer quality ratings?
Well, so what we've found is that for issues like how does something look, or how does something taste, or how does something make my hair look, the community or the crowd, if you will, is very good at that kind of evaluation. And so we will bring in essentially community recommendations, community user reviews as a measure of does the product taste good, or did my kid like it, or did I like it when I used it? So for essentially for product efficacy and satisfaction, we look to the crowd for user reviews. And that has become a very powerful kind of voice for evaluating products and their efficacy and people's satisfaction. But for issues of toxicology or global climate change or even labor rights, human rights issues, we find that the crowd is not so good at evaluating those issues. They don't have good information. It often turns into shouting matches. You can't really get very good information on these complex issues down global supply chains. So what we're trying to do is combine the best of scientific review and evaluation. We have chemists on staff. We have toxicologists. We have environmental life cycle assessment experts that can do that work, and then bringing that together with what the community is good at. So if you will, here's a product that people like you liked. They thought it worked well, it tasted good, it made them look good, and it's been scientifically assessed to be healthy and safe and sustainable. That, for us, is a great combination.
Days to Christmas. It's getting kind of late. But I love to just sit around and just procrastinate. I don't worry and I don't hurry for anything. No. 'Cause you know me, I do all my shopping on Christmas Eve. Some like to shop early in the year.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Dara O'Rourke. He's an associate professor at UC Berkeley and also the co-founder of Good Guide. So, Dara, about a year ago, we did a piece here on Sea Change Radio about nanoparticles. This is a segment that a lot of consumers don't know much about, but it's in more and more of these kind of products that you and your team review. And we really don't know the long-term health effects of these nanoparticles, which are in seemingly every new product. How do you quantify that and how do you put it into your calculus?
Yeah, it is a really interesting issue. And one of the starting challenges of that issue, as you alluded to, is first, we know very little about the long-term human health or environmental impacts of releasing these nanoscale particles both into our bodies and then out into the environment. And so that's a big area where we're looking to cutting-edge academic and governmental and NGO research on what do we even know about these particles and their potential impacts. Do they cross the blood barrier when you put them on your skin? Are they going out into aquatic ecosystems? What do they do once they get out there? Lots and lots of questions about the long-term impacts. The other side of this that is a real challenge for us is there's very little requirement for companies to disclose the presence of nanoscale particles in their products. And for consumers who don't know where they would find nanoparticles, they are showing up again in a wide range of different product categories, from cosmetics and sunscreen, for instance, where the cosmetics industry has decided that people don't like, for instance, their sunscreen to go on white and for their face to have this kind of ghost effect when you spread sunscreens with physical blockers like titanium dioxide or zinc oxide on your skin. Traditional sunscreen particles have been nanoized so that they go on transparent. And this is something that I think industry has seen. Consumers would prefer sunscreen that is transparent and not white and doesn't have that ghost effect. So we see nanoscale particles showing up in sunscreens and in women's cosmetics. And again, we don't really know long-term potential human health impacts of that. We've got early studies coming out of Australia and other places that have been studying this, but really a lot of big questions. This goes all the way to, again, apparel. We're seeing nanoscale particles being applied to apparel. Washing machines that have nanotechnology in them for doing washing, electronics where we're seeing nanoscale chemistries being applied. So it's really popping up all around the consumer marketplace. And again, very little transparency, particularly for products that don't have ingredient lists. Very hard for a consumer to know whether there's nanotechnology in the product or not.
Where are some of the trickier food products for you and your colleagues to make determinations on in terms of long-term health benefits or fears similar to nanotechnology?
So there are continued huge debates over even the most basic labeling and transparency of what's in our food. We saw two major referenda in the United States just this week were defeated by multi-million dollar lobbying campaigns to block requirement for instance, GMO labeling. So there is a battle in the food aisles over disclosure and transparency that is really pretty amazing for 2014, that consumers in the U.S. still often don't know what's in the food product. And when we see these kind of food scandals break, still amazing how little we know about even where our food came from. The inability to trace back to a specific farm when we have E. coli or salmonella outbreaks. So the genetic modification of crops, big issue. But even kind of on the other end, things like high fructose corn syrup. What do we know about this sugar substitute that has been showing up again across the food aisle, not just in your soda, but in all sorts of different products where high fructose corn syrup has been added to products? And big questions about what are the implications for childhood obesity, for type 2 diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. And consumers, we see more and more just want to know. They want to know what's in the product, and then they can choose. Do they want to avoid it or not avoid it? And so from there, we go to more controversial early stage health concerns around things like artificial colors, where research coming out of the UK that has indicated potential connections to ADHD from not the sugar in the candy or the cupcakes, but the artificial colors put on the cupcake or in the candy. And more consumers are becoming aware of those things and want to know, okay, what specific ingredients are in this product, in that 70 ingredient list on my processed food? And are there ones specifically that I want to avoid? So the food aisle, super complicated.
And just sticking with GMOs for a minute, can people go to goodguide.com and find out if a product has GMOs in it, whether or not it's on their label? Are you able to kind of get behind the scenes and make determinations, kind of connecting the dots, if you will?
No. So basically, the U.S. federal government has blocked GMO labeling and disclosure requirements, and attempts at the state level have been defeated. So the only thing you can do right now is look for companies that affirmatively state that they are GMO free. And even that is under attack right now, that there are a number of lawsuits and debates around allowing companies to even make that claim. So what we have on Good Guide is a certification when companies get certified to be GMO free. But that obviously is a small subset of the total food products that you might come in contact with, and no ability to know whether something has GMOs in it if they're not doing that certification. So you basically have to look for USDA organic or GMO free certifications to know that your products would not have GMOs in them. Back in the personal care category in cosmetics, we see the fragrance industry continues to fight a battle to block any disclosure of any of the ingredients within fragrances.
Any ingredients?
Any ingredient. When you look at personal care products, your shampoo or your cosmetics, most of them have some fragrance in it. You know, this will be a surprise for your listeners, but the, you know, floral apple shampoo that you buy doesn't actually have apples or flowers in it.
No.
It has a chemical that was probably developed somewhere in New Jersey or somewhere else around the world that creates that smell.
So you're not just talking about cologne and fragrance.
No.
You're talking about when you see something in a product and it says fragrance.
Exactly.
Why can't we know more about that generic term?
Because the fragrance industry has been very effective in lobbying for a loophole in disclosure in which they are not required to disclose. So if you look at your shampoo or your body wash or your deodorant, it will have an ingredient list, and one of those ingredients will just say fragrance or parfum or something. And within that one word fragrance might be 40 or 50 or 70 chemicals that make up the fragrance
that you may be putting right on your body or your little baby's body.
Well, you definitely are putting it on your body. And there are several classes of chemicals which we know show up in fragrances, phthalates, for instance, that we know have potential human health impacts. And the fragrance industry has been effective. And the fragrance industry is hundreds of years old. And it originates out of French fragrance houses that had their fragrances were considered trade secrets. So they don't patent them. They don't ever disclose them. They're kind of top secret. And it used to be these kind of secret formulation houses that would mix animal musks with some chemicals and et cetera, et cetera. Well, we know there's several chemicals that are significant human health concerns within fragrance, and yet they still remain the kind of a roadblock to transparency in the overall cosmetics and personal care area. So that's one that we're in direct conversation now. The fragrance industry has been effective for a long time in blocking transparency, but I think long-term consumers want to know, retailers want to know, the people that are building these products want to know, and that transparency will come even to that very non-transparent sector.
Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the co-founder of Good Guide, Dara O'Rourke. So one of the new categories, or new to me since we spoke last, Dara, is bottled water. And most people don't think of bottled water as that there's many environmentally friendly alternatives out there at all. But it's also a very popular product, and I think it's important to have more transparency about the product in general. I wanted to focus on how you can incorporate plastics into your calculation, and also what you call the carbon performance leadership index, like the something measuring that carbon footprint. And just if you can stick to bottled water as an example, that'd be great.
Right. This is a category where, on the one hand, you might think nobody should drink bottled water. We should just drink out of our tap. And here in California, our tap water is high quality and it's continuously tested. And it probably is safer for you than buying bottled water, which is much less well regulated. And it is contained in a plastic bottle. And it was shipped from somewhere, either here in Northern California, or it could have been coming from across the country, or it could have come from Fiji. And so we have basically looked at this product category, seen that many consumers do buy bottled water, and they want to know, okay, which is the healthiest, safest, greenest, most sustainable version of bottled water. Water is a good drink. It's better than soda. So on the one hand, we think water is a good thing to be promoting, but we also want to make sure that we're evaluating the environmental impacts of the manufacturer, the packaging, and the transport of that bottled water, and then ultimately the disposal of the packaging. And so we have developed a rating system that looks at kind of basic issues around environmental impacts, things like the transportation of the water, things like how it's packaged, what the commitment of the company is to using recycled content in their packaging, the country of origin of the packaging and the water, et cetera. So you can go on the goodguide.com website and see how we rate bottled water, click on any bottled water and kind of drill down. We also look at the company that produced it, how they treat their workers, et cetera. So it's got some inherent problems, and it is a disposable product and overwhelmingly in plastic packaging that is contributing to a major environmental problem in the U.S. And still we have very low recycling rates of plastic bottles in the U.S. So I think even the best of the beverage companies have very low return rates on their plastics and are really struggling to try to improve that. We also, as you mentioned, are looking at the carbon impacts of this.
Is that why some of the glass ones are actually rated kind of lower because of the transportation costs that go into it?
Absolutely.
Because I was looking at one called Voss, which my wife loves because it's got a glass bottle and it's reusable, though, as opposed to the plastic ones. A lot of people don't want to use and reuse plastics. So she's bought this one bottle of Voss and has reused it now for 6 months. So yep. Would that be, but I see here that's a 5.8 as opposed to the Crystal Springs or something that gets an 8.0. The reusability be factored into your Good Guide score or not?
Well, it's not really in this case because we are evaluating this one bottle of Voss water against one bottle of Crystal Geyser water. And the energy embedded in the production of the glass and then the transport of that much, much heavier packaging than the plastic packaging is really what's dinging this product. So if you do, though, take it and reuse the bottle, then that is a great thing to do. And we would highly recommend that. But we don't have the ability to know what your wife does versus what my wife does with the bottle. This is actually an issue in some categories where the user's phase of the product can swamp the other phases of the product on its environmental impacts. It is very hard for us to kind of see deeply into how long did you use it for? Did you repair it? Did you keep it alive longer than someone else did? Did you wash it in cold water and hang it dry versus washing it in hot water and put it in an electrical dryer? So for apparel, for this category, for automobiles, the use phase matters, and that's one that we don't have great visibility into. So what we basically trying to do is evaluate the product and the company, and then give people tips on how to reduce their overall impact as they interact with the product.
And putting aside the actual products that you review, let's talk about, you've mentioned they can go to the website, but I found that the app that I have on my phone is a terrific way to evaluate it when you're thinking about it, which is when you're shopping. You can just kind of scan it right in there. Why don't you walk our listeners through how it works?
Yeah. So we have, I think, a really great iPhone app that you can download for free. We also have an Android app. And those allow you, as you mentioned, to go into a store and scan the barcode of almost any item in that store and get instant feedback while you're in the aisles on how that product performs. We also see quite a few users doing this at home in their own pantry. They'll take out the iPhone app and scan around what they currently own and see how their current cereal does or their current chips do that they are putting in their kids' lunch snack.
I hadn't done that. I think I need to start doing that.
Yeah. So that's we'll often see, you know, someone scanning 10 or 12 items really quickly. You go, okay, that probably was in a pantry, not in the aisles of a store.
So the things that consumers scan online or through that app are being recorded on your site.
Absolutely. And the reason we do that is we want to know what products to add next. What are the categories that people are scanning or what are new products that are just hitting the market? So we're constantly tracking what people are searching and scanning and filtering for to try to make sure that our product stays kind of as useful to the public as possible. We also have actually done partnerships with Google and Google's product search page and with eBay and their product search and Red Laser scanning page to get the Good Guide ratings into other product search tools so that even if you don't have the Good Guide app or you don't even know about Good Guide, you're doing a search on Google for a product and we can also get you our ratings there. I think really there's a tipping point on mobile shopping that with your phone in the store or with your iPad while you're sitting on your couch at night watching TV, you can be shopping, and you can be shopping in a much smarter way where you're not just believing the marketing message, but you're screening products through your own personal screens for quality and for your friends' recommendations, but also for these health and environmental and social issues.
Dara O'Rourke, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by George Benson, Keb Moe, and Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.